From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Earlier this month, Hank delivered a Sunday morning message at Life Fellowship in Davidson, North Carolina. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we bring you that riveting presentation titled, The Magi, the Monster, and the Messiah. Here now is CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
I am just delighted to be here today to talk about the Christmas narrative. It's the narrative about two kings. One, a king who is known by the moniker King of the Jews. His name was Herod, Herod the Great. The other, King Jesus, who is King of heaven and earth. Paul talked about Jesus Christ when he said he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or rulers or powers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body of the church. He is the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. As we read the Christmas narrative, never forget that the babe born in Bethlehem is the one who is before all things. As we partake of Christmas this year, we live in a fractured America. The foundation of life, foundational to all of human civilization, now has fissures. 57 million abortions since Roe v. Wade. This year, worldwide, almost 60 million abortions just in 2014, worldwide. Nothing more foundational than life. On that foundation, you have marriage. It's been redefined. No small thing. If you flood an economy with counterfeit money, everything is devalued. Government is the second major building block upon the foundation of life. America now has a debt of $20 trillion, or approaching $20 trillion. An aging infrastructure. We're in trouble. Think about the church. 23 out of 25 major evangelical denominations in decline. My good friend Oz Guinness says that in the midst of that kind of decline, there can be renaissance. But that renaissance will only come when we take seriously the narrative in Matthew chapter 2. This is a narrative that is transformational, because ultimately is about the one who came in flesh so that we might partake of his divinity. Precisely what Peter writes about when he says, we are therefore partakers of the divine nature. When Christ came in flesh, It was so that we might partake of the divine nature, not that we may become God as God is in Mormonism. God is altogether other. But so that we might live the engrafted life. That's the story that you find in Matthew chapter 2. I want to read it with you. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, and this was during the time of King Herod. By the way, the Bible gives us all of the details for a reason. The people, the places, and the particulars that you find in Scripture are rooted in history and evidence. With virtually every turn of the archaeologist's spade, there's more and more evidence that everything, to the minutest of details, has its correspondence in truth. So we have the exact time that Jesus is born in Bethlehem. It is during the time of King Herod. And Magi, they come from the east. They go to Jerusalem and they ask, "Where is the one who is born King of the Jews? Because we saw his star in the east and now we've come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had called together all the chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Now let me pause for a moment. There's a difference between typological prophecy and predictive prophecy. Typological prophecy is what we find in Isaiah 7. It is also chronicled in Matthew 1. "Therefore," says Isaiah, "the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and give birth to a son, and will call him Emmanuel." And before the boy knows enough to do right or wrong, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid to waste. That's a typological prophecy. And Matthew, in Matthew chapter 1, says all this took place to fulfill, this is the birth of Jesus Christ, to fulfill what the Lord has said through the prophet: "The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. That is a typological prophecy. So Micah is predictive prophecy. There's a one-to-one correspondence between the prophecy and the prediction. Micah says he's going to be born in Bethlehem. Jesus is born in Bethlehem. Typological prophecy is different than that. Think about what's going on in Isaiah chapter 7. Perhaps you know the story. Ahaz, king of the tiny monarchy of Judah, he is terrified because there are two superpowers perched on his northern border. One Samaria, the other Syria. And the Lord speaks to him through Isaiah and says, "Do not be afraid, because you are going to give birth to a child." The virgin will give birth. And before that child knows to distinguish between right and wrong, those two superpowers will be laid waste. Now, the fulfillment of that prophecy comes in Isaiah chapter 8. Isaiah's wife gives birth to a son named Maher-shalal-hash-baz, which means quick to the plunder. And before the boy knew to say, "My mother" or "My father," Samaria and Syria were destroyed. And yet, Matthew, in Matthew chapter 1, says this is to fulfill what the prophet said. The fulfillment is typological. It's not a double prophecy. If it were a double prophecy, there'd be two virgin births. But there is historical correspondence and intensification. Why? Because Judah experienced temporary salvation. In the end, 150 years later, the temple would be destroyed and all Israel would lie in ruins. Temporary. But Matthew says the salvation that Jesus Christ brings is not temporary. It is eternal. And when you grasp but a thread in the tapestry of typological prophecy, it will open your eyes to the fact that Jesus Christ is the substance that fulfills all the types and shadows in the Old Testament. He is the only one who can emerge through the luminous tapestry of Old Testament prophecy. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Well, when Herod saw the Magi, he called them secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. And as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, of incense, and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod. And Magi come from the east to Jerusalem and ask, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and we have come to worship him." This is a narrative. A narrative about the Magi, the monster, and the Messiah. Encapsulated in that one verse, you have all three. The Magi who come from the east, the monster who resides in the west, and the Messiah who is born in Bethlehem. I want to talk about the Magi from the east who are among the most misunderstood of all biblical figures. More is known by the beloved Christmas carol, "We Three Kings of Orient Are," than anything else with respect to the Magi. The problem is, even in that first phrase, there are almost as many mistakes as there are words. Because they weren't kings. We don't know how many there were, and they were not from the Orient. They were not from the Far East. They hailed from, quite likely, Persia. They were likely Persian wise men, with the operative word being wise. They were not magicians like those in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. They were not astrologers as such. They were wise men who looked to the heavens because in the heavens they saw the imprimatur of God. Far much like Paul said, his eternal power, his divine nature clearly seen through what has been made, and therefore men are without excuse. Or as David said, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they proclaim knowledge. There's no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their words go out to the ends of the earth." And so we have the Magi who look at the heavens and they know that there is a God. But not only so, they have the knowledge of God written upon the very canvas of their consciousness. And because they respond to the light in the heavens, and the light written in their hearts, God gives them more light. They don't reside in Jerusalem, the Mecca. They reside in Persia. Wasn't all that long ago, a couple years ago, I was in Iran, speaking at the University of Tehran, and while I was taking pictures with some of the students in their burqas, one of them pulled a cross out. Emblematic of the reality that it doesn't matter where you live. God places you in the exact times and places so that you can find him if you will. God lives in enough obscurity so that if you do not want to know him, you will not be able to find him. But he dwells in enough light so that if you do want to find him, you will. Paul eloquently describes this on Mars Hill when he says, from one man, God made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth. He determined the exact times and places that they should live, and he did this so that men might reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us.
Through the prophets and through his written word, God has spoken to humanity. Yet what many fail to grasp is that Jesus, as God incarnate, is the ultimate self-revelation of God. To apprehend how truly mind-boggling the Incarnation is, you won't want to miss Hank Hanegraaff's new book, Incarnation, the Ultimate Self-Revelation of God. To receive your copy of Incarnation as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Don't tune out. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff with his message, The Magi, the Monster, and the Messiah. A humorous definition of a conservative is someone who sits and thinks, but mainly sits. With that definition in mind, could the greatest threat to today's church be that many of us mainly sit and don't think? If history is any lesson, the failure to both think and act during times of crisis can be downright dangerous. And for Christians today, increasingly battered by the gale force winds of militant secularism, the need is to think Christianly and act courageously. Faced with these challenges, will you be a conformer or a transformer? Will you be the object of worldly change or an agent of change for the King of Kings? To go on record as an agent of change, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a special year-end gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. An infinite God reduced to the size of a human embryo, the creator of time and space, invading both in human form? Such is the mystery and the majesty of the Incarnation. Supreme being condescending to become one of us. As we look forward to the Advent and the Christmas season, perhaps nothing is more important than grasping the significance of the coming God in human flesh. Without the life, death, and resurrection of the incarnate one who walked among us, our world would be unfathomably dark. To be equipped as a witness and to be inspired in your walk, you'll want to feast on Hank Hanegraaff's book, Incarnation, the Ultimate Self-Revelation of God. To receive your copy of Incarnation, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to help equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Jihadists fighting for the Islamic State have been committing a range of systematic abuses, including mass executions, rape, seizing of property, and the destruction of churches and mosques. While ISIS claims that they are simply obeying Allah and Muhammad, many Westerners and Muslims maintain that such atrocities are strictly forbidden in Islam. Who is right? Other topics include Paul, Second Adam, and theistic evolution, unpacking anime's spiritual depth, what has art to do with evangelism, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you The Magi, the Monster, and the Messiah, a message Hank delivered earlier this month at Life Fellowship in Davidson, North Carolina. Before the break, Hank was explaining how the Magi are a wonderful illustration of the proverb, "I love those who love me, and those who diligently seek me will find me." Here again is CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
And so we have the Magi who look at the heavens and they know that there is a God. So they responded to the light of creation. They responded to the light of conscience. And though they were in Persia, they received the Shekinah glory of God, the star. The star that led them. Well, it is the highlight of the Christmas narrative. And that star that led them from Persia to a tiny hamlet in the south of Jerusalem is a star that has never quite disappeared. That star, it crowns the tops of our Christmas trees. You can find it on Main Street. You can find it in the mall. It is the most dominant motif of Christmas cards. That star. That star guided the Magi on a 1,000-mile journey from Persia to Jerusalem. There have been all kinds of rationalistic efforts to escape the supernatural reality of the star. Some say it was a comet with its brilliant pointing head and long luminous tail, like Halley's comet that went through the skies over Jerusalem, 12 BC. Others say, well, it's a conjunction of planets, Jupiter and Saturn, as happened in 7 BC. Still others, Jupiter and Venus, 6 BC. Yet others suppose that it is a natural phenomenon. It is a supernova, an exploding star, as what took place in 4 BC. But all such rationalistic theories fail to explain how the star which the Magi saw in the east went before them until it stood fixed over Bethlehem. The position of a fixed star varies at most 1 degree per day, and therefore, no fixed star could have led the Magi to the place of Messiah's birth. Neither fixed star nor comet could have disappeared, reappeared, and stood still. Only a miraculous explanation suffices. And you and I as Christians have no problem with the miraculous. If, as most in our culture today, if you are a philosophical naturalist, you will only allow for natural explanations for what you encounter in the universe. But if you are a Christian, you have a truly open mind, you allow for both natural as well as supernatural explanations for what you encounter. In fact, the universe itself demands a supernatural explanation. And so the miraculous is not something that we shy away from. The miraculous is something that we embrace. I believe, and I think there's ample evidence for you to believe, that the star was emblematic of the very Shekinah glory of God itself. Remember when the children of Israel were in Egypt, God led them from Egypt to the promised land by a pillar of fire by night and by a pillar of cloud by day. He led them through the desert to the land of the promise. And so, in similar fashion, the Shekinah glory of God that shone down on the shepherds that first Christmas Eve. That Shekinah glory leads the Magi from Persia on a 1,000-mile trek to Jerusalem, perhaps a trek of a year by camel. It is the same light that shone down upon the Apostle Paul when he was but Saul, the persecutor of Christians. It is the same Shekinah glory that filled the temple that now leads the Magi to the babe of Bethlehem. I love what John Chrysostom, late 4th century bishop of Antioch, said. He said, "This star was not of the common sort, not a star at all, but some invisible power transformed into this appearance. For there is not any natural star that moves in this way, endued with reason." It was as though the veil that separates the habitation of God and the habitation of humanity was parted so that the wise men and the wise men alone could see. They could see a glory not visible to Herod, not visible to the chief priests and teachers of the law, but a glory manifestly visible to the Magi who had eyes to see. And so they followed the star, the Shekinah glory of God, and they left their treasures at the feet of Emmanuel. Gold signifying the fact that he is king. Incense that he is priest, not only priest, but the ultimate priest. When he has come, no longer a need for temple, priest, and sacrifice. The writer of Hebrews says to continue with that when the fulfillment has come is like trampling upon the sacred blood of Jesus Christ. He is king. He is priest, but he is more than that. He is the suffering Messiah who will die that we might live. And so they left him myrrh, emblematic of the embalming of Christ, his death, and then resurrection. Without incarnation, we cannot have resurrection. And without resurrection, we cannot have hope. But with resurrection, we no longer live as the rest of the world lives. With resurrection, we have hope that is hope indeed. Christianity does not promise any one of us a peaceful way to come to terms with all of the maladies that life brings our way. Christianity gives us something far greater, a way to overcome them through the hope, through the reality, through the transparent truth of resurrection. The Magi, they leave their possessions at the feet of Messiah. How different from the monster they encountered in the West. The monster is none other than Herod the Great, the greatest builder in Jewish history. He built the aqueducts. He built the port of Caesarea that brought commerce their way. In fact, the temple itself is called Herod's Temple. He spent years refurbishing the temple so that it would be an epic place for the sociological and spiritual identity of the children of Israel. And yet, he was a monster. And he called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time that the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and he said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. And then, as soon as you find him, report back to me, because I want to go to worship him." Well, unlike the Magi, the monster in the West had no interest in worshiping Messiah. Instead, he wanted Messiah dead because Messiah threatened his sovereignty. His sights were not set on heaven. His sights were set on mean earthly vanities, things below rather than things above. And in the end, the decadent lifestyle of the monster from the West left him with an ulcerated digestive system. Imagine that, when you have all the money, all the fame, all the prosperity that life has to offer, but you have an ulcerated digestive system, an inflamed abdomen. He was involved in every kind of sexual promiscuity, and so he had rotted private parts. And he had the inability to grasp so much as the air that flows free and full about us. In fevered convulsion, the monster in the West dies, and that is but the beginning of his torment. He had every advantage that the Magi did not. He lived in Jerusalem. He was a Jew, a friend of priests and Pharisees. He was acquainted with the prophets. He knew that Christ and Christ alone could emerge through the narrow doorway of psalm and prophecy. And yet, they who lived in darkness embraced the great light, found the birthplace of Messiah. He didn't have to travel 1,000 miles by camel. He was 6 miles away from the birthplace of Messiah. But he didn't want Messiah. He wanted material. The words of James, the half-brother of Jesus, come to mind. Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted. Moths have eaten your clothes, your silver and your gold. They're corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence, but all you have done is fatten yourself for the day of slaughter. Herod the Great, in the end, was but a selfish tyrant, willing to commit any crime in order to gratify his unbounded lusts and ambitions. My co-author, a book I wrote a number of years ago called The Da Vinci Code, Fact or Fiction, Dr. Paul Meyer, the professor of ancient history, put it this way. He married 10 wives who spawned a wriggling, ambitious brood of sons that turned the palace into a human can of worms in their scheming to succeed him. He was so suspicious of one of his favorite wives, he finally killed her. But not only her, her mother, her grandfather, his brother-in-law. In fact, he murdered 3 of his sons and drowned a high priest, another one of his brother-in-laws. His friend Augustus Caesar, king of the world, his patron, eventually said of Herod the Great, "I'd rather be Herod's pig than his son."
C.S. Lewis once wrote, "God became man to turn creatures into sons, not simply to produce better men of the old kind, but to produce a new kind of man." Hank Hanegraaff plumbs the depths of the ultimate self-revelation of God in his new book, Incarnation. To receive your copy of Incarnation as our appreciation for your financial support, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or visit online at equip.org. www.theoneandonlyway.org. Stay tuned. In just minutes, Hank will continue his message, The Magi, the Monster, and the Messiah. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. A growing number of evangelicals are accepting theistic evolution without considering the weight of biblical and theological evidence against evolutionary theory. The Apostle Paul's analogy between Christ and Adam in Romans 5 is central to Christian soteriology, yet it does not seem compatible with an evolutionary theory of common descent, whether naturalistic or theistic. Other topics include, will the real Islam please stand up? Did ancient extraterrestrials visit Earth? The Torah, God's Word, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. This then is the climax of divine revelation, God with us. The infinite has progressively revealed himself in accordance with our finitude. Thus, prior to Emmanuel, general and special revelation revealed his glory. But in the incarnation, we have seen his glory. Thus writes Hank Hanegraaff in his book, Incarnation, the Ultimate Self-Revelation of God. In short, God's incarnation in human flesh is the apex of revelation, his last word. In taking on human flesh, God gives us more than the clearest image of who he is. He gives us himself. To receive your copy of Incarnation as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Did you know that 23 of 25 major evangelical denominations are in decline? Or did you know that we're losing millions of evangelicals from the church in the United States? About 2.6 million per decade. And that what's left of a smaller, shrinking church is splintering over politics and a postmodern view of God and the Bible. Sadly, far too many Christians are simply oblivious in their bubbles, or too glued to their smartphones to notice the rising tide of spiritual and cultural decadence that threatens the church. Thankfully, others are receiving their wake-up calls and deciding to make a difference before it's too late. If you want to make a difference, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a year-end gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-changing outreaches. Or visit equip.org. Equip.org. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Tragically, this mind-boggling event that profoundly altered the course of history, as well as millions of lives over the centuries, is often muffled in the fanfare and busyness of an increasingly commercial Christmas. Yet in his new book, Incarnation, Hank Hanegraaff reveals why God's ultimate act of self-revelation is a treasure beyond words. You won't want to miss Hank's new book, Incarnation, the Ultimate Self-Revelation of God. To receive your copy of Incarnation as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we're featuring Hank's recent message, The Magi, the Monster, and the Messiah. Here again is Hank Hanegraaff.
And thus, in Matthew's nativity narrative, Herod is rightly cast a merciless and manipulative monster, a deluded madman who ordered the massacre of all male babies 2 years or under in the environs of Bethlehem. Why? Because one of them might usurp his power. But in the end, he died like every other man. One of the most riveting passages in all the scripture for me personally is Luke chapter 16. Remember the story that Jesus told? There's a rich man. Purple and linen caressed his flesh. And there was a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, and only the dogs attended to him. And then there's this paradigm shift. Jesus said, the rich man died and Lazarus also. And the rich man was in torment. Imagine that, one moment in luxury, the next in torment. And then Jesus says, the angels carried Lazarus to Abraham's bosom to be comforted there. C.S. Lewis was right. Only two kinds of people in the world. Those who say to Christ on bended knee, thy will be done. And those to whom Christ in the end says, thy will be done. All who desire him, all who wish to be reconciled to Emmanuel, may indeed find everlasting life. And that is the third part of the message, the Messiah born in Bethlehem. But as for you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you one will go forth from me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Think about this. Seven hundreds of years before Jesus was born, the prophet Micah predicted that the birthplace of Messiah would be Bethlehem. And not just any Bethlehem, but Bethlehem Ephrathah. Not Bethlehem in Zebulun, 11 kilometers northwest of Nazareth, but Bethlehem Ephrathah. Had Jesus been born anywhere other than Bethlehem Ephrathah, Micah's prophecy and vicariously the whole of biblical prophecy would have been disqualified. But that's not all. Think about his ancestry. As predicted by the Old Testament prophets, the seed of the woman would be a descendant of Abraham, but not Lot. And then the line would proceed through Isaac, not Ishmael. And then through Jacob, not Esau. The fourth of Jacob's sons, not the first. And he would be the legal heir of David, the long-awaited king of the Jews who would ultimately restore true Israel from their exile in sin. And as such, Matthew, ever the mathematician, arranges, adroitly configures 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile, and 14 from the exile to Christ. 42 generations. Now, these are not purely sequential. They're symmetrical. They're deliberately arranged. Their numerical value corresponding to the name David, Israel's quintessential king, for Christ would forever sit upon the throne of David. Well, one thing is certain, Jesus had to be a Jew, but not any Jew. The Jewish descendant of Israel's quintessential king through Jesse by way of Judah and a lineage of Jacob. So God sovereignly directed the course of human history from the woman Eve who was deceived to the woman Mary who conceived a son who alone could emerge through the doorway of Old Testament prophecy. But there's much more. It wasn't just that his ancestry was predicted, or that of all the hamlets, towns, or cities in the world, only Bethlehem Ephrathah would do. But the manner of his death was predicted. Crucifixion, before it was even invented. The Persians invented crucifixion. The Romans perfected it to extract every ounce of suffering from a victim. The date of his visitation, predicted within narrow time parameters. The fact that he would be an extraordinary worker of miracles and that he would fulfill all the law and the prophets. Remember, Jesus said, I did not come to abolish the law and the prophets. I came to fulfill the law and the prophets. I tell you the truth, said Jesus. Not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. And even that doesn't tell the whole story. For Jesus never came to be a parochial Jewish Messiah. No, he came as a light to the Gentiles, Gentiles like the Magi, so that the gospel could go out to the far reaches of the earth. Only one, only the crystal Christ, the paragon of virtue, can emerge through that tapestry. He is the fulfillment of all the law and the prophets. A number of years ago, I was in Jerusalem, and my guide, Yuval Ross, said to me, the only difference between you and me is that when Jesus appears, you're going to think it's the second time. For me, it'll be the first time. In truth, however, we can know that the one who has already appeared has fulfilled every prophecy, every precept, every principle prefigured in the Old Testament text. The birth of Christ narrative, however, should never merely be marginalized as an explanation. I would be remiss if all I gave you was the proof. Because the incarnation is not just about proof. It's not a mere explanation. It's about an experience. Jesus Christ came into time and space so that we might be able to experience him in inner, interactive communion. Christianity is not then merely about a changed life. It is about an exchange life. It is about the engrafting of Christ. Over the last 10 years, I spent a lot of time in China with the persecuted church. And one of the brothers that has become near and dear to me, a brother by the name of Brother Lin, imprisoned for a total of 24 years, four different times. And he has a face like the face of an angel. Serenity has invaded his soul. And I remember asking him one day, Brother Lin, he was asking me to autograph a book to him. And I said, I can't autograph a book to you. I said, Brother Lin, how have you endured all the indignities that one human being can foist upon another? And he said, Hank, is because I have died. This is the grace of baptism. Buried to our old lives, raised to newness of life through his resurrection power. The engrafting has taken place. And for the rest of our lives, we don't have to live lives of futility, because now Christ lives within. We're living a crucified life. This is what the Eastern Fathers and the Latin Fathers in the early church talked about when they talked about salvation. It was not merely an insurance policy to keep you from going to a bad place and ensure that you go to a good place. It was not even about heaven or the reality of Christ being a future opportunity. It can be a present reality, such that you can live a transformed life, such that you can become a partaker, as Peter put it, a partaker of the divine nature. He took on flesh so that we could experience him, this Jesus of Nazareth. Without money or arms, conquered more millions than Alexander or Napoleon or Muhammad or Herod the Great. Without science and learning, he shed more light on all things human and divine than all of the scholars and philosophers combined. Without the eloquence of schools, he spoke such words of life as were never spoken before or since. And he produced effects that lie beyond the reach of orator or poet. Without writing a single solitary line, he set more pens in motion, furnished more themes for sermons, orations, discussions, learned volumes, works of art, songs of praise, than the whole army of mighty men of ancient and modern times. That is who we worship this Advent season.
Thanks for tuning in to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as thanks for your gift the recording on CD of The Magi, the Monster, and the Messiah, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. Of course, you can also write to us at CRI Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. A humorous definition of a conservative is someone who sits and thinks, but mainly sits. With that definition in mind, could the greatest threat to today's church be that many of us mainly sit and don't think? If history is any lesson, the failure to both think and act during times of crisis can be downright dangerous. And for Christians today, increasingly battered by the gale force winds of militant secularism, the need is to think Christianly and act courageously. Faced with these challenges, will you be a conformer or a transformer? Will you be the object of worldly change or an agent of change for the King of Kings? To go on record as an agent of change, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a special year-end gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to help equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Jihadists fighting for the Islamic State have been committing a range of systematic abuses, including mass executions, rape, seizing of property, and the destruction of churches and mosques. While ISIS claims that they are simply obeying Allah and Muhammad, many Westerners and Muslims maintain that such atrocities are strictly forbidden in Islam. Who is right? Other topics include Paul, Second Adam, and theistic evolution, unpacking anime's spiritual depth, what has art to do with evangelism, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org.